This train is inbound.
Come from Sector C.
My crime is that of outsmarting you.
If you have not yet submitted your identity to the retinal clearance system,
communications interface online.
You're not dealing with AT&T.
Automatic medical systems engaged.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Defensive weapon selection system activated. Have a very safe day.
From San Diego, California, I'm Drake Anubis. Yeah. Okay, so we don't have Enigma this week, I know, but he is off presumably making the world a better place. But joining us, we're lucky to have, all the way from London, Belial of the Hacker's Voice fame, fantastically popular UK podcast. He's a scholar, polymath, renaissance man, good guy, I don't know. Belial, how was your Sunday?
It was good. I spent most of the day driving around looking at places to get married. So that was quite interesting because we're sort of looking at some stately homes and venues for hosting the reception, and obviously the main event itself. That was the main day. Was taken up doing that.
Oh, that sounds fun. My Sunday hasn't started yet because of time zone, so I'll let you know how it goes after the fact.
Yeah, it's quite strange that obviously your day's just beginning and my day is winding up to a close. So I'm going to have dinner after this and you're just having breakfast, so that's quite bizarre.
Yeah, I'm going to make breakfast afterwards, actually.
Yeah, that's how the world works.
What kind of fun did you bring today?
I'd like to have a chat about some stuff that I used to work on when I was younger, and I had a kind of interest in radio frequency to various degrees of actual radio telecommunications to radar, and maybe some of the listeners will be interested in finding out that it's not actually that expensive or out of reach of people to be able to create their own radar and object detection systems, with maybe things that they might have in their own home, possibly. It's not too expensive to be able to hook up a homebrew kind of radar detection, maybe detect your own car or some other metallic objects.
Things you might have in your home, like, you know, a bottle and some string and such, or what are we talking about?
Yeah, not so much. An oscilloscope, a can would work. What you really need is it's two very simple devices. One is your signal generator, which you can use as maybe a signal generator itself, like an oscilloscope type device, with an RF antenna, which has to be the right kind of length for the wavelength that you're trying to generate. You can make it yourself by going to some sort of shop that sells electronic kits. I don't know what you guys have over there in the States.
We have not much. We used to have Radio Shack, and they turned into a cell phone and RC car store. And we somewhat have Fry's Electronics on the West Coast, but that's about it.
Okay, so I guess you could use some sort of RC radio control device, something that will generate a frequency of radio electromagnetic pulse, as it were.
What frequency are we talking about? Like 20 megahertz, like 20 gigahertz, or?
It doesn't matter.
Really?
Yeah, I mean the radio wave band is really quite wide. You said 20 gigahertz and you're not far off. You could use 20, 60 gigahertz, 50 gigahertz are the kind of ultra military sensitive devices. From 40 to 60 is kind of the Q band, which is the military.
I have nothing that high though.
Yeah, well you probably wouldn't, but something within VHF range would be acceptable, so 30 to 330 megahertz, which is 0.9 to 6 meter wavelength.
Sure.
So HF, you could probably do 3 to 30 megahertz, which will probably be in the band of your remote control helicopter type things. If you have like a remote control garage door.
Well, you know what I do have is I have a bunch of CB radio equipment that's all in the 27 megahertz range.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. And if you can generate a 10 to maybe 100 meter wavelength, that's kind of over the horizon radar. That's very, very long range radar. That's perfect for that. I mean, it probably for a homebrew kind of kit, it's probably too big to be detecting those kind of waves. But what you could do is you could not so much concentrate on generating, but also receiving it. So maybe you could do a passive radar and actually detect planes as they fly overhead by just having an antenna array. So instead of looking at it as generating and receiving the signal, you're only just receiving the signal. So that could work.
Like receiving the signal from someone else's radar, like bouncing down?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Exactly. Yes. And you could use your home ham radio equipment, maybe with an oscilloscope as well for measuring. You'd have to calibrate your equipment to a certain extent so that you're aware of the signal distance and strength, and based on that you can find out where the point is on the signal that's drawn on the oscilloscope and convert that into meters of distance or kilometers or miles or however your measurement band is.
How many watts of transmitting power would you need to be effective?
Well, it depends how far you want to transmit. There is a nice little equation that you can use to actually draw the curve of transmitting power over gain and effective aperture or area that covers your field of view. If you're talking about short distance radar, so let's say your garden, not very much. You could probably do like a 1.5 watt transmission, and if you, I mean, you could have like a source, like a pan or something, and you could transmit a directional pulse of maybe 27 megahertz or 30 megahertz, and kind of if you had some sort of like a window wiper motor, and just have it going from left to right. And if you had that going from left to right at a certain speed, you could then, with a fixed antenna, it pick up the signal of when it bounces off that fixed plane, which is what you're detecting as an aircraft or some sort of stealth bomber or something, whatever you think that it could be. And then moving it forward, you'll see that the signal strength of that, as every time that high frequency sweep passes across it, it will scatter that, and some of that will deflect back onto your receiving antenna, and that's where you'll get your blip on your oscilloscope. So as that blip increases in intensity, that will measure up to a distance of each time. The intensity increases, the distance will become shorter and shorter because the actual object is closer and closer to you. So so that's quite interesting. But I mean, all this kind of stuff, I don't know how much budget you'd need. Obviously, if you don't have it already, then you're going to have to buy stuff. But if you're already into kind of radio stuff and you have ham radio equipment, the stuff that you already have, you can actually start doing basic radar.
Well, you know, an oscilloscope is really handy to have. So if you don't have one, I actually don't have a good one. I need to actually buy a nice one. But you can get cheap oscilloscopes, well, cheap and lightly, but at like $100, $200, which is like, what, 1,000 pounds? Actually, no, it'd be the other way, because 100 pounds would be like $1 billion now.
yes, probably. But you don't need an oscilloscope so much as if you have a laptop, you can turn a laptop into an oscilloscope.
Oh, tell me how.
Yeah. So there's if you Google for oscilloscope type applications that you can download from the internet for free and for charge as well, you can use the line in input of your sound card and actually use those signals that you get transmitted, such as audio, whatever. It's the same kind of thing. That's all you're measuring is voltage rate of a signal coming into the input, and using that you can actually turn your laptop into an oscilloscope. It's not going to be on the same scale of accuracy, and you don't want to depend on it for any kind of actual purpose of, I don't know, measuring
For your actual radar system.
Yeah, for your actual if you had a if you were really, really going to go for all out and not actually buy an oscilloscope, but you could use the COM port of your laptop and have some sort of breakout board to measure different voltages and using either custom or purchased software, you can do quite a lot of stuff with that.
I've seen USB oscilloscopes. I don't know how good they are. I've always kind of wondered, but...
Yeah, exactly. Or like a USB oscilloscope you could buy off eBay. I don't think that they're... for like the home market, they're probably perfect because you don't need that much varied calibration and accuracy on it. But just to be able to measure some inputs and draw them on an XY kind of scope, then that's perfect. You could apply that to lots of homebrew projects that you could do.
I'll have to send you a picture after the show. In fact, I'll probably put a link in the show notes. But I have an oscilloscope here that is probably from the days where the British actually first created radar. Because I think it's actually like a 1930s oscilloscope. Like, it has vacuum tubes and things.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's incredible. It probably won't be up to the task because it doesn't actually turn on, I don't think. But it's just so old.
Yeah, people... I don't think people understand how immensely heavy those things used to be. Because when I was in school, we had... these huge oscilloscopes with maybe only 4 or 5 different inputs, but they were quite, the display wasn't that big. It was maybe 20 centimeters by 40 centimeters high, but it was deep, so it would be really, really long and so heavy, and it would have a handle on the top to carry it, but you know, you could only carry it for maybe short distances before your arm
fell off. Oh, that's this one. You just described this one.
Yeah, probably.
It has an actual metal case, only has like 3 inputs and actual physical dials in the front and such.
Yes, yeah, that's the ones that we used when I was at school.
And the screen's a rounded vacuum tube.
Yeah. That's the one, yeah. It's sort of like a green mesh in the front so that it catches the electrodes and actually lights stuff up. But, I mean, you can turn those things into displays, like an actual, not an LCD display, obviously, but you could turn them into a computer display.
A music visualizer or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can display text on them if you were clever enough to actually output the right XY and the right speed to rotate through the different blips, you can get some sort of output.
It'd be like a really geeky version of those things you see at the overpriced gadget stores where it whips back and forth and uses persistence of vision to create a display.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Except it's probably going to be a little bit better because the accuracy of the displays is good, so you can actually get quite decent resolution out of those things.
Really?
Hmm. Well, I mean, the first ever computer game was made by using an oscilloscope as a display, an actual game display, where it refreshed a Pong grid. So you had 2 little paddles on either side and a little ball that went across, and 2 inputs of the Y, I guess, range.
You're kidding. I didn't know this.
Yeah. Just Google for it. Let me see if I can find that.
I'm surprised it's not like tic-tac-toe or something more trivial. I guess tic-tac-toe would be kind of hard to draw on. So
yeah, first Pong game, and there we go. Tennis for 2. Yeah, the original Pong game. But it's not actually Pong, it's sort of just like tennis. I'm just pasting that link into IRC now for you.
Oh, let me take a look at that. Tennis for 2?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's actually on an oscilloscope.
Yeah, yeah. It's a genuine oscilloscope playing a computer game.
Oh, that is an old controller. Or just not a controller at all, really. That's like a project box with a button and a knob.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what they were. I mean, it's quite simple stuff.
Oh, it looks cool, though.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going in the show notes.
So there's lots of applications you can use oscilloscopes for. They're really quite versatile things. But one of the coolest things that I've seen, and I've not really done myself, but I've read about it, is actually lightning radar. It's long distance lightning strike detection, which is, it sounds really, really cool, but it's also extremely fun to do as a project, because it teaches you a lot about antennas and a lot about high frequency and radio frequency detection, because all radio frequency is basically a current going through a bit of metal and generating an electromagnetic pulse, and something else on the other end being able to detect that wave, and it's similar to sound waves propagating through air, except electromagnetic waves are much, much faster, and they have varied frequencies and also modulations as they travel across through barriers like walls and planes and all sorts of things. They can break through barriers unlike sound waves. So sonar is really good for radar underwater, because it can be conducted through water much easier.
So does lightning create like an electromagnetic signature when it strikes?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, so the actual lightning acts as a really powerful radio antenna generator. So it generates a 10 kilohertz range pulse, which sort of expands across throughout the world, so it kind of will bounce across the ionosphere, and you can detect it many miles away from wherever you are at that point in time. To actually be able to detect lightning with any degree of accuracy, you need two of these points anywhere in the world to actually triangulate lightning strikes. So if you have a friend who might be across from the United States of you, so maybe a few kilometers further away from you.
So you couldn't have like two on opposite sides of your house?
Not with any degree of accuracy, no. It needs at least like 50 kilometers distance between yourself.
Okay.
Because
that's not unreasonable.
The reason why is that what you're trying to detect could be 200, 300 kilometers away from you. So the two points of the triangle need to be fairly distant apart for you to get the accuracy of the actual third point, yeah?
Sure.
And you can do all this from a sound card and a bit of homebrew wire gauge and wood to actually make your antenna. You have two loops, so for your west and east orientation, and you basically hook them up through a quite clever antenna connector, which you can just use an Ethernet RJ45 terminator and plug a UDP cable straight into that, and then using the coils for your west and east, so just two loops, terminate them across to your RJ45 UDP cable back to another terminator to a 35mm jack, which can go into your laptop, and using a bit of software which is called the actual lightning radar. If you Google for that, I'll send you a link to this page so that your listeners can look it up after the show. You can actually analyze the coil data that comes through to a varying degree of accuracy actually through the software. So depending on where you are, or in your actual orientation in the world, this is taken from the viewpoint of the UK, you can actually, with some level of degree of accuracy, draw 180 degree radar scope and detect lightning as it hits around you. So it's pretty cool. And if you have more than one of these detection stations, you can get some really good accuracy on that, and you know, detect stuff.
So you could have like Russia. 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah, you could have as many as you want. There isn't really a limit. And
is there
a
community
points
around this, like online, of people who connect their stations together?
I guess so. I don't think it's that big. I think in the Netherlands, this is where this project originated from. There's probably a few guys that do it together, yeah. But I don't know. I don't think it's something as big as Freaking would be, but it's probably just like guys from universities that kind of do it together. I'll send you that link now. It's quite a niche thing to be doing, detecting lightning. It's not kind of the most common thing that people think of when they think about radar.
Let me see. Oh, this is cool. Oh, it shows you a map and everything. Okay, so are each one of those yellow dots a lightning strike or just a...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're lightning hits.
That's all lightning?
Yeah, that's all lightning, yeah. And what people don't understand is... Well, maybe not understand, but maybe can't grasp is that lightning goes on all the time. It's constantly striking the Earth all the time somewhere in the world. Just because it's not raining where you are, it could be raining maybe 60 kilometers away from you, and that's where lightning's happening.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
You have no idea that that's happening. But with the lightning radar, you can actually pick that up and have an idea of what's happening. And if you really wanted to get really quite technical about it, you could have your own weather station detection system and see what front's moving from, you know, west to east or east to west as the winds kind of sweep the lightning across.
Oh, they have antenna diagrams and connector diagrams. Oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So everything there is set up for you to be able to build your own
schematics,
antenna. Yeah.
I love these application screenshots because they look like science because they have all the graphs on the side and everything.
Yeah.
Impress your friends with your lightning detector.
Yeah, exactly. You could, yeah. If your friends were impressed by this kind of stuff, I don't know if they would be.
Have you tried doing this?
I don't know. No, not the radar. Not the lightning radar. No, it's something that I thought was really, really cool. A very cool application to be able to detect lightning strikes, because it's kind of I've always known about the fact that lightning obviously creates high frequency electromagnetic waves, because for the simple fact that it's just a huge amount of energy being dispersed into the atmosphere. It's got to, you know, you can hear it.
Yeah.
Thunder is you can see it first of all, and then you hear it. And yeah, it does actually, you know, disperse a click through the air sort of thing as it kind of strikes. But it's not something I've ever thought about detecting. It's not the area of radar detection that I've done is in the kind of 30 megahertz to 400 megahertz range. And it's more of kind of imaging like cars and stuff as they pass rather than actual lightning strikes.
But, oh, yeah. So you've had your own radar system before?
Yeah, I've set my own little radar system sort of detecting cars as they pass through walls.
Oh, really? So you had it on one side of a wall and you could watch them pass on the street?
Yeah, exactly. And if you have it so that it sweeps from left to right, maybe like a 45 degree angle, you can basically sweep across the whole side street and just see these blips moving. And if you go up the frequency range, so going into the gigahertz range, you're actually increasing the resolution of your radar sweeps, so you can get a little bit more detail. And I know you guys in the States have those kind of see-through scanners when you go past your airport security.
Oh, the millimeter wave technology. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's kind of works on that same principle where it's such a high frequency radio wave that hits your body, and as it scatters or backscatters, it draws a picture onto the receiver, and that's where the high resolution imagery comes back. And that's kind of the similar principle of jet fighters. They what they tend to do is they fly through the air. If they're on their own or if they're in a team, is the radar system will actually, it's not like a continuous feed of live data of the sky. It's patches of the sky being fed through to the computer. So it will basically, it's difficult to explain without kind of showing you a picture, but it kind of sweeps from left to right across the horizon and taking snaps of select pictures of areas of the sky, sort of like in a panorama. So if you only had a certain frame that you could take, you couldn't take a whole panorama. It would take chunks of the sky out, and then it would zigzag across the left-hand side of the horizon, and then back across to the right, and then zigzag across to the top left, and then to the right, and then back down to the bottom left, and then to the right bottom, and then it would basically draw a radar map to the fighter pilot of what's happening on the horizon, and the fighter pilot would, based on the most priority target, which would be right in front of you, maybe to your side and below you, would pick out those areas where are most important, and that's where the radar would mostly focus on, where it's doing its spanning. So yeah, and if you have two planes, they will actually crisscross across their maps, and one will draw the middle and the other one draw with the sides and fill in the whole horizon, so they can actually communicate to each other.
Oh, that's cool. That's really efficient.
Yeah, it's
I'm trying to think of what I could use for my radar, and the only thing I think of that has anything really high would be the microwave in terms of frequency, but that can't be advisable to use as a signal generator.
No, that's perfectly fine. Microwaves are obviously, if you take your microwave generator out of your microwave oven, that's probably not so advisable because of the wattage that it uses. So an average microwave is what, 750 to 850 watts?
Yeah, it's enough to cook a hot pot.
Yeah, it's enough to cook your meal, which is exactly what it's designed to do. You know, it's supposed to energize those water molecules inside your chicken or whatever you're having, and heat that up. Now, that specific application is probably not ideal for radar, because you don't want to destroy the target that you're trying to image. Not necessarily. I guess you could have some sort of death ray, but that's probably not. You know, you're supposed to be passive, so the target isn't really supposed to know that it's being scanned. But yes, I mean, microwave radar is probably the most accurate and high resolution radar you can have, but the energy in the actual waves are a lot less than a microwave oven. So you're talking about maybe 1.5 watts. If even that. Where the precision comes from is not so much from the radio wave generation, but in the actual modulation of the radio waves and also the receiving antenna array. So what happens with high frequency radar is that the actual radio waves are modulated to a time slot, so that each wave has its own time allocation kind of in the actual frequency modulation signal. As the wave is generated, the receiver antenna knows that what it's getting back is 30 seconds ago of what was generated. And based on that, you can have a quicker understanding of what's happening in the sky, because it will take slices out of the horizon at maybe 10 degrees each side. So 10 degrees, 10 degrees, 10 degrees, 10 degrees, all the way through to the right-hand side of the horizon, or maybe a complete 360 degrees in 10-degree slots, and break those down. Each one is a time-modulated sample of the sky, and the receiver antenna will basically put all those samples back together and give you a map of what's happening. So that's kind of how that works.
So radar only detects largely metallic objects, right?
Yeah, things that will disperse the radio waves. So metallic objects are perfect for that application, which is why planes, which is why radar is used for detecting planes, I guess, and cars and anything that is quite a large metallic object works really well at this displacing or dispersing those waves and making them bounce back to the receiving antenna. Things that are organic aren't probably very good for radar because they absorb the energy a lot better. So people like humans would tend to not be so good, that wouldn't image
them. Did you just say people like humans?
Yeah, humans, yeah, I guess. And non-human people as well, aliens. they're stealthy. And they have a thing that's been kind of going on about the you know, windmills. I don't know if you guys have windmills so much in the States.
Like the old those fashioned kind of huge... like the Dutch people with
the clouds not those. They'd be okay actually. The new school windmills, the high speed.
We have them in some areas.
Yeah, so what happens is windmills cause lots and lots of problems for radar. I'm not kidding you.
Oh no, I've heard this actually. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So what they're doing is, this is insane, is they're actually, because of the disruption to radar that windmills cause, because of the way that windmills work, in that they spin around and they disperse radio waves, making it impossible to detect planes behind windmills, because they're basically stealthing out the planes and they're dispersing all this, you know, they're kind of creating a scatter effect across the radar screen. They're actually applying stealth technology from stealth fighters into the wingtips of the windmills. They're actually making sure that the energy is absorbed in the right way and not dispersed, so that when they're scanning the skies, the windmills don't show up. So they're trying to stealth out the windmills, and yeah, I know it's quite incredible. And a company in the UK called Kinetic is actually taking a frontier in this kind of project and actually creating stealth windmills, which is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. But yeah, they're spending a lot of money, like millions and millions and millions of private company and public funds, to actually devise ways of making windmills actually...
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, invisible to radar detection.
I have a mild radar-related anecdote that I just thought of. I read a book once, and I don't remember where it was, but when the British first invented radar, they didn't want the Germans to figure out what they were doing. So they said that the reason they were detecting German planes approaching from such a distance was that they had army soldiers eating a lot of carrots because they're good for your eyes, and looking through really powerful binoculars. Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, that's true. I heard that as well, and it's actually true that carrots are good for your eyes. And there was kind of like an anti-rumor going about, oh, carrots don't make any difference, but they do, because the carotene in the carrots actually make your night vision better. Both those things are true, in that they did say that carrots were fed to the soldiers to make them see better in the dark, which is how they were able to detect the planes, because obviously there's no radar, you know, because radar is
that's like on the memo, because obviously there's no radar, because that doesn't exist yet. Oh, okay, well, that settles that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's quite funny. But I think some of the kind of cool things that that you tend to see, there's no way you could kind of ever get your hands on it, is obviously the satellite radar. And a lot of people think about radar as those big kind of dishes that spin around.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with satellite radar.
Surfaces, but, so yeah, I mean, satellites have radar on board for detecting variance in weather patterns and clouds. And actually bouncing off radio waves.
Oh yeah, I suppose
off the surface of off the surface of the Earth, and then anything that bounces back or that gets absorbed and that doesn't bounce back is obviously a cloud, because the clouds will absorb the radio waves. And also spy satellites, and this is where it kind of gets quite cool and quite MI6, is the 110 gigahertz range, the really quite small millimeter wave band, is used for high resolution, not only meteorological observation, but also vehicles and any kind of high definition radar
from satellites. Imaging
that's done from space.
So the space satellite uses radar that goes all the way down to Earth and can detect a car and bounce that back?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really precise.
Yeah, it is. It's very high spec. And the reason why they use those things is because they can't use optical radar so much, because you can't ever guarantee if it's going to be a clear night. And if you ever look at satellite imagery from space, there's always clouds in the way. Google Maps and those kind of things are actually generally done by planes rather than satellites. So those images that you see of streets and stuff are more than likely have been taken by a altitude plane rather than a satellite. Because if you scroll out of Google Maps, you tend to see kind of wisps of clouds and stuff that get in the way of actually imaging the things that are on the ground, which are all the things that people are interested in seeing. And they have to use this very high frequency, very narrow band radar to break through the cloud and image things that are below it, such as people and houses and cars and what have you, missile silos or whatever.
Oh, that's a good point. I never realized that you don't see any clouds on Google Earth, and you really kind of should.
Yeah, it's because they're not actual satellite images. They're planes.
Well, I knew there were plane images at a certain level, but I assumed there were probably more satellite imagery than there actually was. Because they always make a big deal about, oh, we're launching this new satellite that's now however they measure satellites, you know, with this new higher resolution. And I imagine they can do some kind of patching where they take pictures where there aren't clouds and then just push them together. But, yeah, I guess the most of them are probably predominantly planes.
Yeah, they are. And they're also, it's a mixture, I guess, of planes and satellite images, and also different types of satellite images. I think the companies that actually do it at GOI or Geomapping PLC, and there's other companies that Google pay for their satellite imagery. There's also Cryosat, which is a satellite that's a geostationary satellite for mapping the ice caps of the North and South Poles. And actually downloading scientific data for scientists to analyze based on the actual radio waves that bounce back off the ice caps, so that scientists can see how deep they are and obviously how widespread they are. So you can see how, you know, global warming has an effect on them and whatever.
Oh, that's useful.
So satellite radar has lots of scientific applications to it. So obviously being able to break through the ice caps and detect how deep they actually go, and detecting heat, so infrared radar, detecting how warm the globe is or parts of the globe. You could use that to say, okay, so let's look at an area to see if there's any kind of underground activity for spying or whatever. So millimeter band, you know, resonance. Looking through things, looking through walls, and actually bouncing radio waves from objects internally. But that's more kind of backscatter stuff, so it's sort of what doesn't bounce back is probably a human or some sort of organic material. And they would basically draw a picture of the things that are black rather than the things that bounce back as white.
So what is backscatter exactly?
Okay, so backscatter radar imaging is basically the deflection or the diffusion of radio waves to an object. So if you shoot a line of radar waves at a ball, the radar waves will disperse. And if you were receiving those rays to a receiving antenna array, you could pick up a picture of what's being reflected or refracted off or scattered off that actual object. Now, another form of backscatter radar is high resolution imaging, where you're slicing through an area with radar waves, and whatever isn't being refracted or reflected back, that is being absorbed by some object, probably organic, is what you're actually imaging. So, for example, X-ray is a perfect example of backscatter radar, where the X-rays are generated by a radioactive source, or I think it's more actual electronic now rather than radioactive, or however they do it now. And the X-rays are shot through your body, and your bones absorb the X-rays, and all the X-rays that don't get absorbed get passed to a photographic film, and the photographic film turns black if it gets exposed to X-rays, and all the bits that don't get exposed remain white, which is where the picture of your bones come from. And then that's how doctors can see if you've got broken bones, because there'd be a little fine black hairline crack if you've got a kind of like a hairline break in your leg. That's kind of how backscatter radar works.
Oh, I see, because here they're always advertising the airport scanner, says the new millimeter wave scanner with backscatter technology, and you go, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, that's. I mean, backscatter technology is basically the same thing as radar X-ray. So X-ray is very high-resolution imagery using a certain type of frequency of charged particles, X-rays, to be able to... It hit a photographic film surface to actually expose it, and all the areas that aren't exposed are left white. That's kind of how you draw a negative image of somebody's leg or whatever.
So why is it that X-rays are so dangerous, but the millimeter waves aren't?
X-rays are isotopic particles which can have an effect if you have a long exposure to them to actually change your DNA, not so much change your DNA in the kind of sense of like superhero type shit, but it actually damages parts of your DNA, so that when your DNA splits and forms new cells or whatever, parts of the information in DNA are lost, which can cause cancer. Because maybe let's say the kill switch in DNA is lost. That's kind of how cancer is, because it's just a dividing cell that, yeah, exactly, reproduces, never stops. That's why it's dangerous. But whereas millimeter or microwave radiation is not dangerous to you, is because it's not isotopic. It's not. It just creates heat. It doesn't change your cell structure. And that's probably why it's less dangerous, but it can be dangerous in itself as well, because obviously if you had a high enough wattage of the output of your millimeter radio waves, you could cook somebody from the inside out.
Well, that's fun to think about.
Yeah, but when they say it's safe, I'm 100% sure it's safe, because you'd have to invest a lot of money to be able to, you know, like, why they wouldn't just have like a chain of people going in and like, you know, hot chickens coming out sort of thing.
And the next time I go to the airport, I'm going to look for a little knob going between, like, you know, a happy like person outline, like a turkey with the little heat lines coming off of it.
Yeah, no, yeah. Goodness. Yeah, it's, you know, 20 minutes and stir halfway through.
Yeah, so we need just to stand there for a couple more seconds. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, even when you're in a microwave oven, obviously a microwave is powerful, but you still have to spin the object around to get an even cook. And also the microwave designed to scatter the radio waves back around in itself. And if you just had a microwave generator just pointing in one direction, it would be completely ineffective. In fact, you probably wouldn't even feel it, because it's not focused energy. But if you as soon as you cone that energy back into like a megaphone, let's say, that's when it becomes dangerous, because it's it's scattering those rays in a focused direction towards an object. And that's, if you leave a microwave on by itself without anything inside it, I think it starts to buzz and it starts to, you see little bits of lightning go across and stuff, and that's because the radio waves has been so tightly packed that they're starting to bounce off and generate kind of plasma and shit inside. It's pretty cool if you leave like a spoon or something in the microwave.
You know, if you put a CD in the microwave for just less than a second, it develops these cool fractal lines on it. Have you ever seen that?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the energy dispersed across the film, because it's sort of like a very thin wafer of metallic, I don't know, some sort of fabric that's on the top half of the CD, which is sort of underneath the layer of the label, and that's where the radio waves smash into and cause that kind of fractalization.
You know, a friend of mine used to work at a bar, and there was this one, older guy in his 50s or 60s that always come in, and he'd leave these outrageously huge tips, like $60, $70. And it turns out that he was the guy who invented the first mesh that goes in front of microwaves to prevent the microwave from coming out, but you can still look in to see your food cooking. And so he's like a multi-billionaire now or whatever. How does that mesh work? Because it's not like it's not entirely complete. It has holes in it. How does it absorb so much of the microwave energy?
Okay, so that's the kind of the principle of like a Faraday cage, I suppose, is what you're talking about.
Oh, I suppose that's true, isn't it? Because a Faraday cage is very see-through.
Yeah, a Faraday cage is see-through in that it's see-through because it doesn't have to be complete, because the electricity or lightning will strike the part of the Faraday cage, which is the shortest path to Earth.
So
as long as it's a complete mesh, it will always go down to Earth through the shortest path. The way that sort of like a Tempest mesh. Tempest is a US standard for radio isolation. It has to be the actual gaps have to be a certain width apart for the type of radio waves that you're trying to block. One mesh does not fit all. One mesh will allow some waves to pass and others not. For like blocking, let's say, radio waves, you need 6 to 7 centimeters, millimeters, 2 centimeters for high frequencies and larger gaps for shorter frequencies. So obviously it depends, you have to apply the mesh gap width for the right frequency that you're trying to block.
Wow, so is this like, was this one of your things like in college or your career, like you studied radio waves, or is it just a hobby for you?
Oh no, just a hobby, no.
Really? Oh wow, this is impressive. I gotta get you to help me fix an amp that I can't get working. That's another thing.
Yeah, sure.
Well, this was extremely fun. I thought you were just going to talk about radar, but this was a whole bunch of fun stuff. I feel great now. I learned a bunch of stuff. Do you have anything else to add? If not, I like to keep it under 45 minutes or so if I can. But if you
yeah,
have
no,
to
that's
add,
fine. I guess not, no. I mean, there's it's quite a varied world when you get into radio frequency. And I think if your listeners are interested in the kind of topics that I've discussed, to definitely go on and learn about ham radio, because it's a real kind of step into the world of VHF and UHF and all sorts of different
bands.
I've
always wanted to get into ham radio.
You know, it's kind of an area of amateur hacking that isn't really kind of, I guess, as popular as freaking or computer hacking or programming. But it's also an area of great amount of possibilities of being able to tinker with various things. And when you start talking about radio telephony and actually communicating with computers across radio modems, you know, that's kind of
the packet next radio level. And such.
Yeah, exactly. And people like some of the guys that I go to 2600 meetings and talk to, they had no idea that you can just call up a radio and send bit streams across and have, you know, packet radio internet access.
They do you have like repeater networks there? Because I know especially on the West Coast, you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have them all over the place, all over the UK.
Oh, that's cool. I've always wanted to get into that, but I haven't. Mostly, I haven't been able to figure out where to invest all the money in the equipment. Do you have a recommendation for entry-level ham radio equipment? Like a good brand you trust or anything?
Yeah, I guess ICOM is probably quite good, but they tend to be expensive. So Bearcat, Uniden, ICOM, those are the kind of two brands that I would say are probably good. I mean, start small. Obviously, don't spend, you know, $6,000 on a base station and, you know, get completely confused about all the different buttons. Start small. Buy yourself like a small...
like a handheld?
Airband handheld receiver that covers maybe 10 megahertz all the way to 600 megahertz. And that's more than enough for you to get listening on the radio waves. And you'll start learning different things. I mean, you'll be able to pick up pager radio and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I got to get you to come back on and talk about intercepting pagers. That sounds fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that some other time, actually, because that's quite a big topic in itself, I think.
Oh, well, this is good. We have other stuff like this. Okay, yes. Well, let's end now, because I tried to end 5 minutes ago, and I dragged on. I'm sorry. Okay, well, then thanks for being here, and
sure, no worries.
I hope you'll come back in the future.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Hopefully you get some feedback, and maybe some people enjoyed this.